What you are about to hear, the views and opinions expressed on the Philip D. Blackman Show do not reflect the views of this station. You have been warned.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Philip D. Blackman, host of the Philip D. Blackman Show. Join me every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday right here at 5 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time. But in the meantime, friends, buckle up, get your mind right, and get ready for the fastest hour in radio. Thank you for tuning in. Let's get it started.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Hey, hello, 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 ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another exciting, fun-filled episode of the Philip D. Blackman Show. I'm your host, Philip D. Blackman, and welcome to the fastest hour in radio. By the way, Casey Starkey, I'm not going to say it for the radio audience, but there you go, Nick. All right, so man, we ain't even got started yet. All right, so guys, classroom instruction so far that we're looking at right now, and the discussion that's happening by school personnel, third party, you know, these discussions, these instructions on sexual orientation or gender identity, is taking place across the nation, and it's doing more harm than it can possibly do any good for our children. Children, as a matter of fact, are learning more that there are more than 70 different terms to describe gender identity and expression before they can even learn to count to 70. Isn't that something? You know, there's a deliberate effort to champion and even to create gender dysphoria in our children, and often too early. And it's to provide some experimental puberty blockers and procedures that are irreversible, and it's causing permanent damage to a child before they even see adulthood. You know, contrary to the lack of evidence that supports this campaign, parents, teachers, politicians, they're giving consent for life-altering procedures on someone who still believes in Santa Claus and who still believes in the Tooth Fairy. So tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we're actually going to be discussing gender dysphoria and the effects that it's actually having on our children in the classroom. Now, guys, as always, hey, we are live right now. We're broadcasting across all social media platforms right here, of course, the Facebook, Twitter, Twitch. So Facebook is at the Philip D. Blackman Show, as well as YouTube. Twitter's and Twitch are at thepdbshow.com. And, of course, right here we're broadcasting on LinkedIn for our second consecutive show. Hopefully you guys are tuned in through LinkedIn and you're able to participate in the conversation, you're able to participate in the show. Guys, thank you so much for joining me. So if you want to leave a comment, you want to participate in the show in any way, hey, social media, they're great options. Or you can call or text the show at any time to the number on my screen at 409-245-9753. Again, for all my listeners across the airwaves, that is 409-245-9753. Now, ladies and gentlemen, here it is. So to all my listeners across the nation, around the globe, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode, 279, Reshaping America, Gender Identity and the Classroom. So let's get it started, right? So for my first-time listeners, we've dedicated the opening segment of each show, and we call it End of Watch. This is our way of honoring our fallen men and women in the law enforcement community. Last year, 2021, we had 639 officers die in the line of duty. And as of this show, we've lost 167. That means we've picked up 5 officer deaths just since Monday. Now, we get our numbers from the Officer Down Memorial page. That's the best, most up-to-date, current, real-time information we have on all of our officers and all of our numbers. So, you know, go to the website, give it a check out, and you're going to see a quote in there that we absolutely agree with. You know, that when a police officer is killed, it's not just an agency that loses an officer. It is an entire nation. We honor all of our officers who serve and who have given their life in service to their community and their country. And we highlight a different officer every week, beginning with the Monday show. This week, friends, we're going to continue our coverage honoring Washington County PA Sheriff's Office Corporal Chad M. Beatty in this opening segment. End of watch.
The Philip D. Blackman Show proudly salutes Corporal Chad M. Beatty 45 of the Washington County Sheriff's Office in Pennsylvania, who died on August 10, 2022, when he suffered a heart attack after a foot pursuit of a fleeing subject. Corporal Beatty served his department for 20 honorable years and spent most of that time working in the fugitive unit. The WCSO released a statement saying, "The entire Washington County Sheriff's Office expresses its deepest sympathies to Corporal Beatty's family and friends on the loss of a friend and colleague. Corporal Beatty is survived by his son and parents to carry on his legacy. On behalf of the Philip D. Blackman Show and a grateful nation, thank you for your service, Corporal Beatty." Washington County, Pennsylvania Corporal Chad M. Beatty. End of watch, August 10th, 2022. Rest in peace, sir.
We are proudly sponsored by One of a Kind Art 43, created by professional artist Tammy Blackman. Tammy offers free consultations and will customize your art piece to fit your needs. Each of her pieces are, as the name suggests, is one of a kind because each are personalized pieces, and once she is done, there will never be another. If you are interested, go visit Tammy on her social media pages, Facebook and TikTok, by searching One of a Kind Art 43, where Tammy broadcasts her work and she's making custom tumblers or canvas art for another satisfied customer. You can always reach out to Tammy through her email at oneofakindart43@gmail.com. or call 409-234-5156. Although the prices vary, the quality is unmatched. Again, her social media pages are one of a kind with underscores between each word, followed by the word art and the number 43. Thank you again, Tammy, for another presence on this show.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody?
Julie. Hey, guess what day it is?
Oh, come on. I know you can hear me.
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Ronnie, how happy are folks who save hundreds of dollars switching to Geico?
I'd say happier than a camel on Wednesday.
Hump day!
Get happy. Yeah. Get Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
All right, guys. So, again, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thank you for joining me, Reshaping America Gender Identity in the Classroom. You know, every broadcaster, anyone who does a show like this, that discusses news, current events, politics, things like that, they have this thing that they call the pile. And I didn't know this until I started researching other broadcasters. And, you know, they all have a pile. They all have a list of news stories that they wanted to cover, but for some reason they weren't able to get to it because, you know, let's face it, the news cycle runs entirely too fast to keep up with, especially if you're going to try to give any attention to it. So tonight, I actually did I did something a little bit different. I decided to go forward and do a show specifically around this whole notion of transgender behavior, gender fluid, all this stuff that's being taught in the classroom. Now, look, before I go any further, this show is not, will not, and will never attack someone because of their gender orientation or because of their sexual orientation, their gender identity. That is not what this show is about. What this show is about, however, is the whole concept, this whole notion of what damage, you know, because those of you people who are championing this idea of a transgender child, you're adults. You're people who've already had the opportunity to run your course and to make your decisions for your own life. You understand every consequence? Well, for the most part, people understand every consequence to every decision they make. Some that are intended, some are unintended. But yet we have these people who are the wokest of the woke, right? And I've said it time and time again. I'll continue to say it time and time again. It seems like that most people who are declaring themselves as woke are the ones who have their eyes shut the tightest. They don't. They make these decisions on equity and inclusivity and equality, but they're not really paying attention to the consequence of their behavior, trying to push these grown-up ideas on these little humans. You know, this whole idea of pushing sex, gender identity, gender dysphoria, you know, it is traumatic to our children. It's catastrophic. You know, when you talk about our future, you know, we're raising a bunch of little kids who are going to grow up, and they're growing up conditioned. They're growing up confused. They're growing up to be professional victims. Our school system is putting out en masse professional victims. You're either a victim because of your gender identity, or because of your sexual orientation, or because of your race, or because of your religious standpoint. We're creating whatever happened to the basic fundamentals of school, reading, writing, and arithmetic, right? Somewhere we brought in politics into our classroom. Now, look, I agree. Politics does have it should have a presence in our classrooms at, you know, about high school era. But this whole notion of teenagers, of 9, 10, 11-year-old kids identifying, I'm transgender. I'm a boy, or I'm a girl trapped in a boy's body, or I'm a girl trapped in a boy's body. You know, it's very concerning for people like me, because I sit back and I look and I pay attention. What in the world is going on? Why are we doing this? You know, I mean, we're talking about having conversations about sex, gender identity, when most adults don't quite frankly understand it either. You know, properly understanding sex and gender identity, and even more importantly, gender dysphoria, is going to continue to be the pressing concerns for the foreseeable future. We know this. We've been seeing it happen for a while. You know, proper understanding is a prerequisite for properly forming, you know, people in the truth and properly ministering to people that are in need. You know, as gender ideologies are promoted throughout America, they're lies. They're going to impact not only those who suffer from true gender dysphoria, but all children. All children who need to mature into their own self-understanding as if they are a boy or they are a girl, a man or a woman, a potential husband, a potential wife, a mother or a father. You know, the chat room's already lighting up, and I want to do what I can to try to get as many of you guys as I can. So first and foremost, to my guys in social media land, thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for your comments. Rob Williams says, damn, this dude is handsome from the ground up. You bet your ass I am. That's why I tell people I'm half man, half amazing. Pat Alfrey says, I still say I identify as a millionaire trapped in the body of a working stiff. Well, then what we need to do, Pat, is we need to get these millionaires to recognize their privilege and start coming off their hard-earned money to give to people like you, right? And me and everyone else. Laura Harlow says in the chat, 18-year-olds have a terrible enough making up their minds and using good judgment. How can little kids understand? Well, if you'll remember back when the election, in the 2020 election, Laura, to your point, Nancy Pelosi and politicians were talking about how we need to change the voting age to 16 years old because these kids can do it. They understand how, right? They can't understand politics. No, and we're talking about the people who serve in the Congress, who serve in the House and the Senate. These jackoffs don't understand it, but yet they're saying that kids do. They can understand politics enough to make a vote. However, they're not smart enough, or they don't have the mental capacity to, I don't know, go buy a gun until they're 21. They can't drink alcohol until they're 21 because of these heavy weights and these heavy costs and these heavy consequences. But yet we're still saying that these little kids, they can't vote, they can't drink, and, you know, and they can't buy firearms until they're 21 is what they're trying to push. Now, the voting is still 18, but they're saying that the reason why it's 21 is because these kids can't handle it, the responsibility. But yet they can handle doing something permanent, permanently damaging their body in helping them identify as transgender. So I agree with your point, Laura. Rob Williams says that he says in the chat that when my kids got sent this is why my kids got sent to private school. It is worth the cost. Absolutely. And that's where we're seeing a lot more parents move over from public schools to private schools because of that. Laura Harlow says they need civics classes. Girl, they need a lot more than that. Maybe some prayer. Joe Cantu says, for the first time in our lifetime, children are able to express themselves without fear. We don't understand it because it wasn't taught to us. This is exactly how we fix that. Well, you know, Joe, again, talking about this whole idea of children being able to express themselves, I have no problem with that whatsoever. I encourage it. I think that children, that their voices should be heard, but the science doesn't support it. Unfortunately, the science doesn't support this whole idea. Remember, these are kids who still believe in Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy, and they want to be everything else in the world. But yet they can. You're telling me that these kids, who science has shown that they can grow out of this idea, that we're making it okay for them. I don't understand the concept. You know, hopefully we can, as we're moving through the show, Joe, you'll pick up what I'm throwing down, or I'll pick up what you're throwing down. Or again, 409-245-9753. I encourage the conversation because, again, I don't claim to be right. I don't claim to be absolute. I just claim to be a guy who's done a little research and has an opinion on the matter. Tammy Blackman says, going to school didn't help me to figure out my sexual identity. Life did. Absolutely. And Laura even says it is ironic. But, you know, so here it is. So, right, in 2007, Boston Children's Hospital, it became the first major program in the United States to focus on transgender children and adolescents. And that's what their website brags. Now, a decade later, more than 45 pediatric gender clinics have opened their doors across the nation to our children. You know, parents are told that puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones may be the only way to prevent their children from committing suicide. But never mind the fact that the best studies on gender dysphoria show that between 85 and 95% of children who express a discordant gender identity, if you will come to identify with their bodily sex if a natural development is allowed to proceed. I'm going to say that again because the best studies in gender dysphoria say that between 80 to 95% of the children that who have a problem with their gender identity, they will come to identify with their bodily sex if a natural development is allowed to proceed. But it's not being allowed to proceed because parents are going, oh, little Johnny, you feel like you want to be little Jenny? Here you go. Let's get you the medication you need. I mean, this is almost a self-correcting issue, and it can be a self-correcting issue if we just allow it to run its course, but that's not what we're doing. I mean, never mind that transitioning treatment, it has not been shown to reduce the extraordinary high rate of suicide attempts among people who identify as transgender. We're talking like 41% compared to the 4.6 of the generational population. Now, never mind that people who have had transition surgery are 19 times more likely to commit suicide. You know, these statistics should be enough to halt the headlong rush into transitioning and really prompt us to take a step back and find more effective ways to prevent these tragic outcomes. But most of all, we shouldn't be encouraging children to transition or making heroes out of role models of those who have done so. Yes, we should be tolerant, indeed loving, you know, towards all those who struggle with their gender identity, regardless of what their age is. But we should also be aware of the harm that is done to the common good, particularly to children, when transgender identity is normalized. You know, these transgender activists, they're not merely asking for tolerance or kindness. They're demanding affirmation, not just from adults, but from children and adolescents who are already challenged by the normal process of a sexual development. In a culture where transgender identities are not only affirmed but celebrated, everyone's going to be compelled to construct their own gender identity. That's why we have 70 of them sons of bitches right now. 70 gender identities. Because everybody wants to belong somewhere. You know, it's unaided by a common understanding of sex differences and why they matter. You know, the best biology and psychology and philosophy, they all support an understanding of sex as a bodily reality. An understanding of gender as a social manifestation of bodily sex. Biology isn't bigotry. Contrary to how many people are going to call, you know, throw names out to people like me who's talking about this. I'm a bigot. No, I'm talking biology here. So Roxanne Kirby says in the chat, she says, children want to be pirates and circus performers. They are not equipped to decide to change their gender. Amen. Pat Alfrey says, story time. While I was a corrections officer, I worked with a female officer who went through the academy with me. She's a badass. In the years that passed since then, at some point, he continues to write, she decided she wanted to be a he. I supported him 110% in this. But the point here is, he was a full-grown adult and capable of deciding. He says he's very happy now, and that's what matters. But he was a grown-ass adult when this decision happened. You know, Pat, I appreciate this story because I've actually trained. I've trained and I've trained with a lot, you know, some service members who were trans members of, you know, more notably in the security forces, you know, and they are very capable at their job. But again, to your point, they were adults. Frank Graybar says, would you be okay with gender-affirming caring kids if medicine wasn't involved? So would you accept a social transition? You know, Frank, I really believe that, yes, if medicine wasn't involved, if we held that off, that element of giving puberty blockers and transitioning healthcare, if you will, to your point. Yeah, I think so. I think I absolutely would if medicine wasn't involved, because then they're making their natural course. We're treating the psychology behind it. And when they become adults, absolutely, let them jump right in. If they want to make that transition, fine, let them make that transition as an adult. But my argument here is, by doing this as, you know, well before they're adult, you know, that's the problem that I'm having. Laura Harlow says, one of my close friend's daughters is going through the transition to become a man. They are fighting about it, but I have to side with her adult kid. He is grown. Amen. Laura says, hi, Frank. I think the point here is to leave the life-altering surgeries and drugs out of it until they're grown. That's the point of tonight's show, you know, because I love the idea that people can be free to decide, you know, what gender they want to identify with. But I have a problem with it when we start bringing it in, when we start allowing parents, when we start allowing parents to make these decisions for their child, when there are countless stories out there where kids who have went through the transition, you know, before they were an adult, they wait a minute, I was wrong. And now they have to go through all the work to undo all the work that they did because they were confused. That's kind of the issue for me, you know, but even more so, right? We got these militant, and they are militant, these transgender activists. They're imposing their agenda with an uncompromising zeal on our school children. And of course, that's fine with what's going on up in D.C. I mean, this administration announced last April that they're going to enhance the legal entitlements of transgender public school students with these new guarantees regarding their access to bathrooms and locker rooms and sports competitions. Now, and the thing is, these issues, man, they do exactly what they're supposed to do. They grab the headlines. But they're less harmful to most students than the damage that's actually being done by the distortion of the school curriculum. From the youngest age, students are being brainwashed with this whole gender ideology. And we're talking children as young as 5 years old. They're being encouraged to disregard their anatomy, to choose their gender based off their feelings. I'm sorry, but that is just not the way life works. We don't live in a life full of feelings. We live in a life full of facts, and we do have to make those changes. But again, you know, there's a reason, you know, when I'm growing up, you know, and Joe, to your point earlier, you know, we were, as kids, we were to be seen and not heard. Absolutely. And did I agree with it then? Absolutely not. No, I did not. But the reason behind that, the wisdom behind that is most of this stuff that's going to come out of a kid's mouth, it's nonsense. When you talk about you have a five-year-old transgender activist, that is lunacy. You know, California mother, I read where she raged at the Spreckles Union School District board for that, where they were allowing teachers to coach her 12-year-old daughter on becoming a boy, you know, choosing a boy's name, and even more so hiding that plan from that child's family. You know, I've talked about gender dysphoria. What is it? So what, by definition, what gender dysphoria is, it's a rare medical condition that makes people feel mismatched with their sexual anatomy. Now, gender dysphoria, it actually occurs in about 0.6% of the adult population, and that's according to the UCLA School of Law, Williams Institute. Anyone who's afflicted should be treated with kindness, and they should be offered medical help. And of course, it first appears in childhood, but with so few children affected, the curriculum should not be distorted for everyone. You know, elementary school teachers, they're putting words on the blackboard like non-binary and transgender even before the kids have learned basic multiplication. Robert Ballacher Sr. says that, I don't want It don't help when Hollywood figures show up at functions wearing dresses and skirts. Example, Brad Pitt. Yeah, and then some more. But, you know, Maine's Department of Education, they reported that between 13 and 18% of public high school students, they say that they're lesbian, gay, bisexual, or unsure of their sexual identity. Between 13 and 18% of public high school students, they identify in Boston or in Maine as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or unsure. Okay. It's no wonder when the curriculum programs them to actually doubt their identity. I think that's the point. I mean, in school, it's cool, truly. It is cool to be anything but heterosexual or white. But Maine requires their public school teachers to explore the achievements of the LGBTQ plus individuals, not just in health class, but also in history and social studies. That's indoctrination, since teachers, they're not asked to do the same thing for the celibate, for example. Public schools shouldn't be taking sides or getting involved in matters of sex, especially before these children make it to high school. But in Maine and several other states, they absolutely are. You know, the last year when the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in a case involving Maine's public schools, the state attorney actually insisted that they're not religiously neutral, which is hysterical. You know, even Justice Sam Alito, he was skeptical, and he asked Christopher Taub, you know, if he'd say that about schools that teach critical race theory. And of course, he ducked the question because there is no defense to it. Now, Alito would have been even more on the mark by asking about Maine's transgender curriculum. You know, it's the left's new religion, and there's nothing neutral about it. Where do the parents go for help to help stop this propagandizing of our children? I'm sorry to say it's not the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, despite its centuries-long recorded or record protecting the free exercise of religion. But lately, the ACLU, they've demoted religious rights, and they put them even below transgender rights. The ACLU actually declares that religion is being used as an excuse to discriminate others. Even the International Olympic Committee also, you know, stepped up to the transgender apostles as well, you know. The IOC announced that it's recommending eliminating any test whatsoever, including testosterone levels, for transgender athletes to compete in women's events. Fairness be damned. But don't count on your leaders up in D.C. Joe Biden's even told the transgender crowd that your president has your back. And again, this is not a gig to say that transgender folks should not have they should not have rights. This is nothing against the adults. I'm talking specifically on our children here. You know, Joe Biden and company, they're unlikely to strike a middle ground that respects the majority as well as the transgender minority. I remember growing up hearing this whole idea about majority rule, minority right. The majority makes the rules because they're voted into the rules, but because they are the majority don't mean that they get to rule with an iron fist. The minorities also have a right. And I'm talking about political minority, not the hyphenated Americans that we have now. But the truth is, if students are to be educated rather than indoctrinated, parents are going to have to stand up to these transgender militants. No one else has the nerve to, because they don't want to be vilified by anyone. And I'm sure that if this video gets out, you know, there's going to be people who are calling for my cancellation because I'm speaking against the approved narrative that's been published and demanded conformity. You know, we're seeing increases in conversations surrounding sex and gender actually start to infiltrate our schools, which is really causing more harm to our kids than any possible good that can come out of it. As a nation, we're accommodating and we're making rules and laws that support, defend, and promote a mental illness called gender dysphoria. You know, in the case of somebody who believes that he or she is a woman trapped in a man's body, you know, anyone who dares to call it a mental illness, they invite scorn. They invite vilification upon themselves, you know, and it involves disparaging terms like bigot and genderist. I mean, is transgenderism a mental illness? You know, are there any academically and professionally respected sources towards which we can turn to help us reach an informed opinion? Yeah. You know, for years we've been told that there's nothing mentally wrong with people who identify as transgender. Yet, just last week, the Federal Court of Appeals, they made a ruling that gender dysphoria is a protected disability. Wait a minute, if there's nothing wrong with them, then why is it a protected disability? You know, but even more so, you know, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders. If you've never read the DSM, it's recognized as the gold standard tool for identifying mental illnesses. And they published in conjunction with American Psychiatric Society. Gender dysphoria, according to them, is now recognized a disability. Yet, we're encouraging our children to learn about it in schools, and we're forcing our children to conform to a mental illness. We're promoting this mental illness as something that is normal and good. Gender dysphoria in adults and children, it's considered a disorder if the person also experiences a significant distress or impairment in major areas of life, such as, got to reset because my mind is running too fast for myself. You know, these men and women, these adults who experience gender dysphoria, you know, it is truly a major impairment in their lives. You know, in other words, you know, the current official view of the worldwide psychiatric professionals, you know, in the DSM, is that people who identify as transgender, believing that they are one gender trapped in the opposite gender's body, the DSM says they suffer a mental illness. You know, some psychologists and activists, they believe that the diagnosis of gender dysphoria, it should be removed from the DSM because being transgender is they say it's a social identity rather than a mental illness, that the label may contribute a stigma towards trans people, and that the diagnosis echoes the previous classification of homosexuality as a mental disorder. So they're pushing this idea, once again, of changing the definition of a word to meet a narrative that they want to meet. Again, this is not an attack on anyone who identifies as transgender. There's no way in hell that I'd sit here and attack a group of people for suffering from a mental illness of gender dysphoria, no more than I would attack anyone for suffering from anxiety, depression, PTSD. However, I will truly attack the adults in the room, the politicians, the educators, and even the parents of children who are suffering from gender dysphoria. And that is the subject of tonight's episode, The Breakdown. Okay, so the American College of Pediatricians, they recently released a powerful position statement that stated that the move to indoctrinate children with the idea that they can pick their gender, they argue that it amounts to child abuse. They're urging legislators and educators to reject all the policies that would condition children to accept chemical and surgical distortions, allowing people to impersonate the opposite sex. You know, this movement, it's now in full swing in government schools with LGBT activists demanding bathroom and locker room access. And of course, this raises a serious privacy question for girls who are going to have an anatomical male using their facilities. On Friday the 13th, in May of 2016, Barack Obama and his administration, they issued an edit to all U.S. schools requiring that they open bathrooms according to self-proclaimed gender identity instead of a biological sex, or they're going to risk a lawsuit and loss of federal funds. Now, since January 20 of 2021, this policy's back in full force. The specific wording of this mandate, however, it does much more than that. It dictates that boys who self-identify as female, that they should be allowed to use girls' locker rooms and shower facilities and vice versa. Specifically states that making a gender-neutral, single-stall bathroom available to transgender students is insufficient. If a girl's bathroom or locker room exists, boys and men who identify as female must be allowed entry and vice versa. It also dictates that students must be allowed to play the sport of the gender they self-identify. It specifically states that a student may self-identify his or her gender to the school without parental permission or knowledge. It also forbids any medical requirements as a prerequisite for new gender identity. And lastly, it dictates that on school field trips, boys who identify as female, they must be allowed to sleep in the same hotel rooms as female students and vice versa, providing a private hotel room for a transgender student. It's not allowed unless all students are lodged in private rooms. You know, these policies, they aren't just going into effect in some obscure place like California. You know, all schools that receive Title IX federal funding are going to be required to enforce this matter, this mandate, or else. 20 years ago, it's doubtful that more than a small percentage of Americans even knew what the term transgender meant. Today, gender-confused celebrities have their own reality TV shows. They appear on magazine covers. They're part of a well-funded vocal political movement. Cities across the nation, they're considering special right laws for people who choose their gender and demand, not ask, but demand support and approval and accommodations based on their behavioral choice. I want my listeners and viewers to understand. I want you to be equipped with the dangers of this social engineering project. You know, for example, late last year when parents started standing up, you know, in Loudoun County, in Virginia, up against that school district for their indoctrination of their children, there was a book that the school district, they admitted that it was in their elementary school library as under the optional reading selection. And it's called It Feels So Good to Be Yourself. And it's written by Theresa Thorne. It describes terms like sex assigned at birth, intersex, gender identity, gender expression, cisgender, transgender, non-binary to readers, to elementary school kids. Chances are if you ran these same words by an adult in the room, chances are they're not going to have any damn clue. But yet you want these kids to understand this and you want them to even understand why. Theresa Thorne says that, she said, quote, "It is my wish that this book helps children to better understand themselves and others." She said this book is for trans kids and cis kids and non-binary kids and gender fluid kids and gender expansive kids, questioning kids, all kids everywhere. First off, all those little kids that she put in there, they're made up words. It's all BS. You know, this book isn't about treating people with kindness. It's about encouraging young people to question their gender before they're able to read proficiently, before they're able to multiply or divide. And know the state capitals. I mean, what happened to that? You know, this book and others like it, they promote the ideology that many parents would find objectionable to be pushing on their kids in a public school, especially children that are so young. The book opens up with this sentence right here on the screen. "This is Ruthie. She is a transgender girl. That means when she was born, everyone thought she was a boy until she grew a little older, old enough to tell everyone that she's actually a girl. Girl is Ruthie's gender identity. This is Ruthie's brother Xavier in the next page." The book continues that Xavier is a cisgender boy. This means that when Xavier was born, everyone thought he was a boy. And as he grew older, it turned out everyone was right. He's a boy. Well, no shit. But they go on to say the boy is Xavier's gender identity. And even Thorne goes on to write that there's so many different ways to be a boy or a girl, too many to fit in this book. No, 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 no. There are so many ways to be a boy or a girl. No, Jack, boy or girl, that's the curriculum. You just kind of laid it out. And for her to say there's so many ways to be a boy or girl, this is the lunacy that's coming in. This is my problem. You know, she says that not everyone feels like they're either a boy or a girl. So that makes them non-binary. It's a helpful word that can help describe a kid who doesn't feel exactly like a boy or a girl. And then she goes on to describe this kid named Alex, who is a child who is both a boy and a girl. She says when, quote, the book says that when Alex was born, everyone thought Alex was a girl, but Alex is both boy and girl. This is Alex's gender identity. Next, the author, she goes on to describe JJ, who's a kid in a wheelchair. We got to make it inclusive, right? JJ is neither a boy or a girl, writes Thorne. Ever since JJ was very little, they never felt exactly like a boy or a girl. They just felt like themselves. This is JJ's gender identity. And the author even goes on to tell readers that it doesn't matter whether they feel like a boy or a girl or both or neither. If you describe yourself another way, that is your gender identity, which means we can make this shit up as we go. She says that your gender identity might match what people thought you were born, or it might not. See, when you're born, she says, you couldn't tell people who you were or how you felt. And the book continues alongside with the illustration of a newborn baby. JJ is neither a boy or a girl. Ever since JJ was little, they never really felt like a boy or a girl. They just felt like themselves. Are you kidding me? You know, there's a lot of public controversies. you know, about how these institutions should treat individuals who identify as a gender that doesn't correspond with their biological sex. And they've been debated in the halls of government and courtrooms, TV talk shows. Should males who identify as a woman have access to women's restrooms? That is the big question. Guys, 409-245-9753 if you want to join the conversation. If you want to weigh in, social media is great, or you can actually call and we can have the discussion ourselves. Because again, I'm not the end all be all. I'm not the final authority here. I'm just a person who's done research and is providing the snapshot for you. So should women, or should males who identify as women, have access to women's restrooms? Well, I think Roxanne Kirby hits it right there. She says absolutely no. She even answered it for you in English and Spanish. She's bilingual. Roxanne, right on for yourself, giving it to us in two languages. That is inclusivity. She also says the adults are more damn confused than they're trying to convince the kids that they are. Absolutely. All right, so which school locker rooms, I guess, to add the next question, which school locker room really should girls who identify as boys be permitted or required to use? I mean, should teachers be compelled to use a student's preferred pronoun or even a gender-neutral pronoun such as Z, which is Z-E, instead of he or she? Again, gender-neutral pronoun, I never thought I'd ever see the day. But alongside these questions of public concern, you know, there's quieter matters of medicine and well-being. You know, how should medical and mental health professionals, how should they care for these patients who identify as an opposite sex? How should families support their loved ones who do so? And the stakes are high. As detailed in a recent report, you know, in these pages, you know, people who identify as transgender, you know, they're disproportionately likely to suffer from a variety of mental health problems, including depression, anxiety, suicide attempts, and even successful suicide. Psychiatrists who follow the American Psychiatric Association's DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, they use the term gender dysphoria, which is, you know, again, it's an incongruence between one's experienced or expressed gender and their assigned gender. They say it's a difference, and it's accompanied by a clinically significant distress or impairment in a social or an occupational or some other important area of functioning that is subjective. But in this context, man, experienced or expressed gender refers to the gender that the person subjectively identifies as or wishes to be publicly recognized as, which is often referred to as their gender identity. While their assigned gender role, or their assigned gender, if you will, it refers in almost all cases to his or her biological sex. Now, in rare cases, a person's biological sex is difficult to determine, you know, such intersex individuals, they're born with both features of male and female. But most transgender individuals, they're not biologically intersex. There is a striking little scientific understanding of the important questions underlying the debates over gender identity. You know, for instance, there's very little scientific evidence explaining why some people identify as the opposite sex or why childhood expressions of cross-gender identification, it persists for some individuals and not even for others. Yet, notwithstanding the limited data, physicians and mental health care providers, they have arrived at a number of methods for treating these children, these adolescents, and these adults with gender dysphoria. But of particular concern is the management of gender dysphoria in our children. Again, if you're over 18, I could care less. But young people with gender dysphoria, they constitute a singularly vulnerable population, one that experiences high rates of depression and self-harm and even suicide. This is a point in their life where hormones are starting to show up. But moreover, children, they're not fully capable of understanding what it means to be a man or a woman. Hell, most of your politicians on the left up in D.C., they can't tell you what a woman is, but yet you believe that a child can make that decision for themselves. And these are adults who can't define it, but kids, absolutely. You know, most children with gender identity problems, they eventually come to accept the gender associated with their sex, and they stop identifying as the opposite. Now, there is some evidence, however, that gender dysphoria and cross-gender identification, it becomes more persistent if they last into adolescence. In one prominent treatment approach that was called gender affirming, and this is the issue, right? The therapist is actually accepting rather than challenging the patient's self-understanding as being the opposite sex. You know, these gender-affirming models of treatment, they're applied even to very young children. 5 years old is the youngest one that I've seen so far. but often these gender-affirming approaches is followed, you know, in later youth and adulthood by hormonal and surgical interventions intended to make these patients' appearances align more closely with what they feel inside, other than their biological sex. In order to improve the success of the physical changes, interventions, they argue, has to happen at a younger age to increasingly to make sure that these that these surgeries are that they're going to stick. The younger we hit them, the better it's going to be. The more we indoctrinate them, the easier it's going to be for them to make the transition. So with that in mind, we're actually seeing this faddish push to indoctrinate children who still pretend to be ponies and astronauts and police and soldiers and rock stars, ballet dancers, into this idea that they're pretending to be a pony or an astronaut or police or soldier, rock star, ballet dancer. These kids, this idea that these kids are, or, you know, that these gender-affirming arguments, you know, will say that if this child is pretending to be a pony or an astronaut or police, that's ludicrous. But pretending to be a boy when they're a girl or vice versa, that's perfectly normal. Man, what a time to be alive. And that's the breakdown. Guys, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with you.
Hello, ladies. Look at your man. Now back to me. Now back at your man. Now back to me. Sadly, he isn't me. But if he stopped using lady-scented body wash and switched to Old Spice, he could smell like he's me. Look down. Back up. Where are you? You're on a boat with the man your man could smell like. What's in your hand? Back at me. I have it. It's an oyster with two tickets to that thing you love. Look again. The tickets are now diamonds. Anything is possible when your man smells like Old Spice and not a lady. I'm on a horse.
On a suspicious Fansville by Dr. Pepper.
Howdy, Logan. Wonder if you can help me out with something.
Sure, Sheriff.
Looking for a couple of goalposts. Went missing after the big win last night.
What? That's awful. Who would steal a goalpost?
Say, that is a nice new swing set you got there.
Oh, this old thing. It makes the boy happy, I guess.
Interesting design.
Oh, yeah, it's Scandinavian. You know what? You should check the streakers across the street. They have a very suspicious new antenna.
Thanks for the tip.
Anytime, Sheriff.
Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve.
All right, guys, welcome back. Episode 279, Reshaping America, Gender Identity and the Classroom, 409-245-9753. Roxanne in the chat writes that if they are born a male, they will die a male. When you neuter a male dog, he is still a male dog. Well, did you ask him if he feels like a male dog? Roxanne even goes on to say that when a lot of these children grow up, they're going to hate their parents who allowed their bodies to be mutilated. Well, and we're actually seeing some of that happen now. But, you know, what's blowing me away about all this is this whole gender identity clinics, you know, that are offering the gender affirmative psychotherapy for children and adolescents. They've opened for business in the United States and several other countries. Now, there is little systematically collected data on the number of young people or even the number of adults who identify as transgender or who have undergone the reassignment surgery. But there is some evidence that the number of people receiving medical and psychotherapeutic care for gender identity issues, it's on the rise. It's happening more. Why? Because we're indoctrinating them earlier. You know, the reasons for these rising rates, they are unclear, but that's just my speculation. You know, and it may be because there is an increased public awareness of gender dysphoria, and it's made parents more willing to seek medical help for their children. All right, so I know who this is. Hey, Frank, how are you doing, brother? Welcome to the show. Always good to hear from you. How you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you? Driving home in a rainstorm and then stuck in traffic, listening to your show. I love it.
Oh, well, I appreciate it, man. So what do you got for me?
So I'm kind of torn on this conversation, right? Okay. I want to preface this by saying that I do not support any kind of surgical procedures or even medicinal, prescribing certain drugs for any kind of gender-affirming care. However, I'm not against, and I do support a social transition. So if a 7 or an 8 year old child decides to say, you know, I am a boy, I am a girl, that it should be okay for society as a whole to recognize that, and affirm it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe at some point the kid turns 18 and the kid says, you know, maybe I wasn't. Right, because I think that there's a clear difference between a clinical diagnosis of gender dysphoria and a kind of this idea that you want to be in a group. You want to be, you want to have an identity. You want to be a part of something.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, we, not to compare the two, but you think of a veteran identity, that is a big identity to a lot of people. And, and when someone leaves the service, it's hard for them to move into that kind of civilian mindset. So they hold on to that veteran identity. And so I think it's common for us culturally to want to be a part of a group. So I, like I said, I do think there's a difference between a clinical diagnosis and just wanting to fit in. And I also, I kind of caution using terms like normal, because normal differs by, per person, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So someone who is depressed and they're constantly depressed, that is their normal. So when you ask them, how are you doing? They say, oh, I'm fine. When we know they're not fine, but to them, they're fine.
Yeah, their normal is always dark. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I just think, I don't think there's anything wrong. And that's why I kind of asked the question earlier, what do you think about so like accepting kind of a social transition and allowing the child to kind of just to kind of agreeing with the child. Yes, you're a boy. Yes, you're a girl. But not any kind of medical interventions until later on in life.
All right, Frank. So here's my I want to. Oh, Jesus Christ. We got another call coming in. We'll catch him later. Jesus. All right, there we go. All right. Are you still with me, Frank?
Yeah, I'm still here.
That threw me away. That threw me off a little bit. All right. So, the issue for me is, when I'm looking, do I think that children, look, I agree. I mean, I have no problem with the social side of it. You know, as long as a child comes to it on their own. Right. If and I think that's kind of the rub for me. If these children just, you know, on their own say, hey, you know, mom, dad, I want to be a girl today. All right. Right on. You know, if they come to it on their own, you know, because when your kid says that they're playing soldiers or they're playing their ponies or whatever thing that they're playing at that point in their imagination. You know, if they come to it on their own, we don't disparage them. We don't ridicule them. We just, okay, well, hey, that's who you are. I'll play pretend with you for a little while. But my issue is that when we start trying to push this idea into the school system, that's my problem. When we're trying to teach these kids about gender pronouns that most adults don't even understand. But if they want to identify as male or female, I'm okay with that. I just don't like the idea of us promoting this idea that you should be different, one, and two, I don't like this idea of utilizing medication. I mean, let them. I think this is something that should be reserved until they're older.
And so, one last thing I want to say about school, I don't think there's anything wrong. I have a 3-year-old daughter, right, and so she's going to be entering school in a few years. I don't have anything wrong with acknowledging the existence of trans people or non-binary people, et cetera. Hmm. What I agree with you on is there's a way to acknowledge the existence without pushing the ideology and saying that you have to accept them as, I think you should just call someone what they want to be called. Right. In general, like we talk about our first name, you know, if my first name's Frank and you want to call me Dick, you know, I'd be like, no, that's not my name. But I think when you start telling someone in a classroom that their idea is wrong, like you can't, you're a bigot if you don't support this. I don't agree with that, but I'm not against teaching the existence of someone who's different, right? Or the existence of, as long as it's not pushing ideology, because you save, I know there's a whole argument regarding what universities are, right? As a college student, I think those types of conversations are meant for university, where a 22-year-old can argue with another 23-year-old about philosophy or whatever. But when you're sitting in a third grade classroom, just teach the basics, the science, the math, the English, you know, or sixth grade and maybe another language, whatever the case may be, just teach the skills somebody needs to know. It's okay to acknowledge the existence of people, but don't push ideology on others.
Agreed.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I think that's where it is for me. But man, Frank, as always, I appreciate you. I appreciate you calling me back, or I appreciate you weighing in, brother. It's as always, I value your opinion and that of all my listeners. But man, thank you so much for thank you for your support. Thank you for listening, and more importantly, thank you for calling in and just being an amazing friend, man. Thank you so much, Frank.
Of course, I'm always here.
All right, brother. God bless you, and I'm always here if you need anything out here. All right, so that was we had another caller call in. Obviously, I was on the other line. So hey, if you want to call back, you know, please call back. I'd love to have this conversation with anyone and everyone, because everyone has a feeling on it, and that is that to me that's important to recognize. Now, Roxanne says in the chat, she says, if you want to dress as a boy or a girl, have at it. That is what's great about this country. Just don't mutilate your child because he likes to play with dolls or she likes to play with trucks. I was a tomboy. I played sports. I played with cars and trucks. I danced. I had dolls. I grew up. I married. Had 7 children. Let kids be kids. They'll grow up and figure out their own life. Now, Roxanne, I guess the question is have you ever been one of those persons who identified as the member of the opposite sex? All right, so looks like we got Charles or someone from his show calling. How you doing, buddy?
Phil.
Well, what are you up to?
Hello, sir.
Well, what do you got for me, Charles?
I can't believe we're still having these types of discussions.
I agree.
It really kind of irks me a little bit. Even to the point where the one point that was made, and I guess I was on a time delay until I finally caught up, but even to the question of, can a transgender boy, I guess boy going into a girl, use a ladies' restroom? No. No.
Wait, what was the question? Can a boy do what?
A transgender boy, a boy going into being a girl, okay, right? Can they use a ladies' restroom? No.
Well, no, absolutely.
No, you cannot. If you still have male genitalia, you are classified as still a boy. You can identify with whatever you want. Today, I'm identifying as a bank. A broke bank, but a bank, because I think I need to have money deposited into me.
Right.
You can identify whatever you want. Because right now, identity is just... Identity is dying. You know why it's dying, Philip? Is because when you go ahead and give the person the right to identify however they wish, then it gets saturated. Then it goes ahead and gets made fun of. It loses its legitimacy.
So you're saying, Charles, that maybe this whole idea of identifying all this, that it's actually your argument, I'm guessing, is maybe by promoting all this, it's actually hurting the transgender community. Is that a fair assessment?
I think it's making the transgender community more of a joke.
Yeah.
You want to go ahead and identify, you have to stick with the two basic ground rules. You want to identify as a male or a female, guess what? You're using the same two genders that you were born with. The option, doctor takes you out of mommy. Mom, and you, doctor takes a look at you. Oh, you're a boy.
Mm.
Oh, you're a girl. How is that? Well, because you either have a wee-wee, or you have a cooter.
Right.
I mean, it's just really that simple. And we're taking something so simple, and we are diluting it. Now, I understand people have issues.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about mental issues. I'm not talking about your wrong issues. I'm talking about issues. Well, I was supposed to be a girl.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine. I was supposed to be a boy. Okay, fine. Whatever the case may be. Until you go ahead and perform that change, you are still who you were before.
That's it.
You want to be a girl? Go ahead, be a girl. Get it done. Get surgery done. Be a girl.
So, Charles, what's your thought on? I mean, because you know you have young ones in your house. What's your thought on this happening in the school system with letting these little kids mutilate themselves?
Moral disaster. And I know I could probably be crucified for this, for anybody that wants to listen, but it's a moral disaster. How can you allow kids under any type of school age, and I'm even going as far as high school, almost to the point of going to high school, these kids don't even know enough about how to run their own lives, let alone they've grown up having fun. What are you going to go ahead and put information in their brains like that for?
Yeah, they don't even understand their own sexuality. Yeah, they don't.
Let them be kids.
They don't understand their own sexuality. I mean, I agree. I mean, let them be kids. They got plenty of time to decide if they want to be a bird or a bee. But I mean, I think it's very irresponsible of these parents, and it's irresponsible of us as a society to allow this to happen. But Charles, right. Before I let you go, man, do me a favor. So guys, this is Charles Richardson of the Charles Richardson Show. It's a pretty entertaining program. Charles, go ahead and plug your show for me, man. Get these people listening.
Well, now my show's on from 8 p.m. Eastern to 10 p.m. Eastern, 3 days a week, literally almost following right after Philip's show, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. We are on our home station, Raw Talk Online Radio. There's no more website. You have to go to tune in to listen.
Nice.
But I'm heard on Facebook, on my own personal, the Charles Richardson Show Facebook page, and I'm on YouTube, just like Philip is. Just look up on my station. Look at the Charles Richardson Show, and you can catch it, all the past shows as well.
And it's full of nonsense and laughs, guys. I tell you, this is a great show. You guys want to tune in. Charles, as always, brother,
More nonsense than laughter, I can tell you that much.
Well, man, I appreciate you calling. I appreciate your commentary. And, man, I appreciate your show. Man, keep kicking ass, and we'll continue to support the best we can.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right, brother. Take care. All right, so hey, two good callers, man. Again, 409-245-9753. If you want to weigh in, I'm all about it. Just again, you know, everybody has an opinion, and you know, I want you to make your voice heard. So Roxanne, I asked a question when she was growing up, did she ever identify as a boy? She says, no, I always told my family that when they asked what I wanted to be when I grew up, it was a mommy. That's amazing. Can I put a link in the chat?
That's what I wanted to be when I grew up.
Geez, Alou. Yeah, I can. So again, ladies and gentlemen, this is episode number 279. Man, we're talking reshaping America, gender identity in the classroom. And just because it was asked for it, Laura, I'm going to put the link up right here for Charles Richardson's Facebook or for his YouTube channel. If you want to go give it a watch, he'll be on here shortly after I'm done. All right, but getting back to it, right? So the medical treatments that were actually provided for children with apparent symptoms of gender dysphoria, which includes the affirmation of gender expression from the earliest evidence of cross-gender behaviors, it may actually start to drive some children to persist in identifying as transgender when they may otherwise, as they've grown older, found their own gender to be aligned with their sex. What we're doing is we're encouraging these people that, hey, you need to be different because this is how you get your attention. And this is kind of what kids do. They want to be, they want to belong. But you know, the thing is gender identity for children, it's very elastic, right? And that is because it can change over time. It's very plastic, you know, because it can be shaped by forces like parental approval and societal conditions. But if the increasing use of gender-affirming care, if it does cause children to persist with their identification as opposite sex, then many children who would otherwise not need ongoing medical treatment would be exposed to that hormonal and that surgical intervention. But one particular gender-affirming intervention for children and young adolescents with gender dysphoria is its puberty suppression. It's called puberty blocking, right? And what it is, it's a hormone intervention that prevents the progression of normal puberty. And this is toxic. This is dangerous for these kids. Puberty, it's a turbulent time in any young person's life. It can be terrifying, you know, for all those who identify as the opposite sex. You can see countless storyboards out there, people telling their story that they identified as something else and how hard it was for them in school. But for parents of children with gender dysphoria, puberty suppression, it can appear like a very attractive idea. You know, it seems like it might offer a medical solution for an anticipated confusion or anxiety or distress by holding back the development of the most conspicuous features of the children's biological sex. Puberty suppression in itself, it seems to offer that intermediate step between the social affirmation that parents can give very young children of the sex reassignment procedures that their kids can pursue once they're grown. They've got plenty of time in their life, Lord willing, to make that decision. You know, that first 18 years of your life, as someone who's 43 years old, I can tell you, That 18 years is a drop, man. It went by quickly. I didn't feel like it at the time, but it did. It's a small segment of our life. And it seems to offer, I think, a way to mitigate the discordance between children's beliefs about their gender and the realities of their bodily development, you know, rather than, you know, challenging the children's self-understanding. This idea of puberty suppression, it can, in short, look like a very safe passage from a stormy sea of childhood expressions of beliefs about gender to the secure harbor of an adulthood that's lived permanently as the opposite sex. In light of the ongoing and the growing prominence of gender identity issues in our society and the appeal that puberty suppression may you know, have for parents raising children who identify as the opposite sex, it's worth examining in detail what puberty suppression is, how it works, and really rather it's safe and it's prudent, as its advocates maintain. And as we've seen, and as we will continue to see, the evidence for the safety and the efficacy of puberty suppression, it's very thin, almost transparent. And it's based more on the subjective judgment of clinicians than the rigorous empirical evidence. It is, in a sense, it's still experimental, yet it's an experiment that's being conducted in an uncontrolled and unsystematic manner. Roxanne Kirby in the chat says, the only one that I've ever watched that I felt empathy for was Jazz. From an early age, she felt female trapped in a male's body. I don't know who Jazz is, but if you would, Roxanne, send me a private message and of a link, and you know, give me that way I can get in there and learn a little bit more. But you know, the experimental medical treatments for children, you know, it's got to be subjected, especially into intense scrutiny. We have to. We owe it to them. I mean, since children, they can't provide the legal consent for medical treatment of any kind, it's parents or guardians who's got to consent for their child to receive treatment. And to say nothing of consenting to become a research subject for testing an unproven theory. I mean, in the case of gender dysphoria, the safety and the efficacy of puberty-suppressing hormones, it's not well-founded on evidence. Contrary to what they'll tell you, the hormone interventions used for suppressing puberty in children, it has undergone clinical trials, and these trials were, as discussed, for other indications like delaying the early arrival of puberty. You know, whether puberty suppression is safe and effective when it's used for gender dysphoria, it remains very unclear, and that's why my problem, that's the problem that I have with all this. It's unsupported by rigorous scientific evidence. I mean, this is especially worrying in light of the lack of understanding of the causes of gender dysphoria in children and adults. The hormonal interventions that treat that condition, they're tailored to its cause. In the case of gender dysphoria, we simply just don't know what actually causes a child to identify as an opposite sex. So medical interventions like puberty suppression, they can't directly address it. Puberty suppression, it's an intervention for gender dysphoria, and it's been accepted so rapidly by so much of the medical community, apparently without scientific scrutiny, that there is a reason for people to be concerned about the welfare of the children who's receiving it, as well as the reason to question the veracity of some of the claims it's made to support its use, such as the assertion that it's physiological and psychologically reversible. That is not true. To better understand the treatment options for children with gender dysphoria, it's worth really examining the origins of this approach and the justifications offered for it. The use of puberty suppression and the cross-sex hormones for minors, it's a radical step. Let's call it what it is. It's a radical step that presumes a great deal of knowledge and competence on the part of children assenting to these procedures, on the part of the parents of the guardians being asked to give that legal consent with them, and on the part of scientists and physicians who are developing and administering them. They all need to be held accountable. You know, we frequently hear from neuroscientists that the adolescent brain is too immature to make a reliably rational decision. But yet we're supposed to expect emotionally troubled adolescents to make decisions about their gender identities and about their serious medical treatments at the age of 12 years old or younger. And we're supposed to expect that parents and physicians to evaluate the risk and benefits of puberty suppression despite the state of ignorance in the scientific community about the nature of gender identity in itself. The claim that puberty-blocking treatments are fully reversible, it makes them appear less drastic, but this claim is not supported by scientific evidence. It remains unknown whether or not ordinary sex-typical puberty will resume following the suppression of puberty patients, or in patients with gender dysphoria. They don't know if they can restart puberty once they stop it. But it's also unclear whether children will be able to develop a normal reproductive cycle if they're able to withdraw from puberty suppression. You know, and it likewise remains unclear whether the bone and muscle development will proceed normally with these children if they resume puberty as their biological sex. But furthermore, we don't really fully understand the psychological consequences of using puberty suppression to treat young people with gender dysphoria. You know, there's a lot more research that needs to be resolved in these unanswered questions. But at the same time, the research into how and why gender dysphoria occurs, it persists and detests with, it's got to continue. And as well, it could occludiate new ways to help people cope with gender dysphoria with less permanent and drastic treatments than sex reassignment, like Frank was talking about a while ago on the phone. You know, while there's so much that's really not known with the certainty about gender dysphoria, there is clear evidence that patients who identify as the opposite sex, they suffer a great deal. They have higher rates of anxiety, they have higher rates of depression, and even suicide than the general population. Something has to be done to help these patients. But as scientists struggle to better understand what gender dysphoria is and what causes it, it wouldn't really seem prudent to embrace more hormonal treatments and sex reassignment as the foremost therapeutic role and tool for treating this condition. Like I think it was Roxanne or Laura earlier who said, you know, when you change the sexual reassignment, you know, it doesn't change. It doesn't work. It's impossible to reassign someone and someone's sex physically. And attempting to do so, it doesn't produce good outcomes psychosocially. A gentleman who actually did a good report on this, his name is Dr. Paul McHugh. He's the University Distinguished Service Professor of Psychiatry at Johns Hopkins. He explained that transgender men do not become women, nor do transgender women become men. He says that all, including Bruce Jenner, all become feminized men or masculinized women, counterfeits, impersonators of the sex which they identify. And that lies their problematic future. Guys, we're going to take our last set of commercial breaks, and we'll be back with you on the other end with one final thing. Stick around.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Way Too Proud of Texas Guy.
Mr. Way Too Proud of Texas Guy.
Men from lesser states may know their state's capital, but you know your state's bird, tree, and even reptile.
Love that horny toad.
You display your pride with your Lone Star tattoo, Native Texan bumper sticker, and contempt for any state that doesn't start with Tex and end with Is.
That spells Texas.
Sure, there are 49 other states in the Union, but they're smaller, wussier, and the people talk funny.
Yankee wussy.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, oh lover of the Lone Star State, because all that flag-waving must have made you mighty thirsty.
Mr. Way Too Proud of Texas.
Bud Light beer at Isopus, Houston, Texas.
All right, guys, so one final thing as we get ready to wrap this show up, guys, in the final storm of lunacy that surrounds this, the media and their collective clickbait headlines, this one jumped out at me. And again, I've wanted to cover it for a really long time, but again, the news cycle's fast. It's hard to keep up with everything that you want to cover. So here's the headline brought to you by NBC News. The headline reads, Texas trans activist 11 flees the state after years of advocacy. Texas trans activist, 11 years old, flees the state after years of advocacy. Years of advocacy at 11 years old. You know, in the article, we hear this heroic and this tragic tale perfectly summed up in the opening sentence about Kai Shipley, an 11-year-old transgender activist in Texas, is leaving the state after having fought anti-trans bills there since she was 5. All right. So someone out there actually believes that this child has been an activist and is fighting for trans rights since he was 5 years old. Really? you know, most kids at 5 years old, you know, they're interested in complex ideas like, hey, when's nap time? You know, when can I go outside and play? You know, who shuts the door when the bus driver gets off the bus? How does Jell-O work? These are things that five-year-olds think about. But we're expected to believe an 11-year-old child is a trans activist and has been one for the majority of their lives. And now, this kid is having to flee the state of Texas to protect a prominent trans rights activist? Does anyone out there believe this shit anymore? I mean, of course they do, because they're woke and they believe that anyone can be anything they want in life, regardless of the criteria that's been well established, otherwise it's discrimination. I mean, could you imagine little Shaquille O'Neal's parents promising him that he could be anything he wanted to be in life and never take no for an answer? Well, okay. What if Shaquille O'Neal wanted to be a jockey? I mean, would he be discriminated against because there are no 7-foot-1 jockeys, regardless of the fact that jockeys typically stand between 4'10 and 5'7? Which, by the way, Tammy, if you ever looking for a new hobby, you make the mark. You can go be a jockey if you want it to be. But I digress. Or I guess would society make the argument that it's only because he's black that he can't be a jockey? I mean, who's to say? But the lunacy is equally relevant given my example. No, America, Texas isn't running anybody out of the state, and there certainly is no reason to use the verb flee as a description of relocating from one state to another that has laws that more closely aligns with you and your beliefs. You know, this is chaos porn, once again, from the media, and it's presenting to everyday readers. It's absolutely disgusting. The media and the politicians have done everything they can to prove their wokeness and create the narratives that see people attacked because they don't agree. Think about what's happening in this country. Almost a year ago, I remember reading a story about how a female inmate in California recently became pregnant after being forced to share a cell with a fully biological man, as California law allows prisoners to serve their sentence in the facility that corresponds with the gender which they identify. You know, the new laws led to hundreds of men requesting to be transferred to female facilities, and rather unsurprisingly, many of the men are now being housed with women who, by the way, are violent sex offenders who are imprisoned for brutally beating and raping women. So much for women's rights. I mean, even being an inmate, I mean, you should still have some kind of rights. But regrettably, this is only just one example of the severe repercussions resulting from the indulgence of this vile lunacy that is transgenderism. Children and adults alike, they're being forced to share not only prisons, but bathrooms and locker rooms and nearly every other traditional gender-segregated facility with members of the opposite biological sex, and the results of which, they're horrifying. For example, there have been multiple recent incidents of biological men who identify as women exposing themselves to underage girls in spas and pools. And it was met with a euphoric praise and acceptance by the media and activists alike. The LA Times, for instance, they believe that, quote, no one has an absolute right to feel comfortable all the time. And they even dismissed any concern about the situation as hullabaloo. Now, look, while it's true that individuals don't really always have a right to feel comfortable, I agree, they do have a right to privacy and not to be subjected to what invariably amounts to indecent exposure. But unfortunately, legislators and judges, they have shown little regard for these rights, and they'll gladly trample them for the purported enforcement of equal treatment for members of the transgender community. In fact, it was California state law that prevented spa staff members from intervening when a biological man entered a woman's section naked. But additionally, the U.S. Supreme Court chose to leave in place a lower court ruling that forces public schools to allow students to use the restroom that corresponds with their gender identity, despite the understandable apprehension and fear that such policies cause both male and female students. The Biden administration has even fully embraced the lunacy of transgenderism, stating in June that gender identity is fully protected under Title IX. And it's not, by the way. But, you know, Biden has never really been one to come out there and have any idea what he's talking about. But Title IX, that's that federal law that prohibits sex-based discrimination in any federally funded education program. Now, although safety and privacy, they are key components of the transgender debate, it'd be impossible to fully discuss the issue without referencing the devastating effects that it has on women's sports. You know, the most recent example, and I covered it in one of my shows, the 2020 Olympics. I call it the Woke Olympics. You know, the first games to feature openly transgender athletes. New Zealand weightlifter Laurel Hubbard, you know, that's probably the best option to demonstrate the absurdity of allowing a biological man to compete against biological women. Hubbard, who identified as a transgender woman since 2013, already went through puberty, already went through all the good stuff, all the stuff that was supposed to happen, thicker bone mass, thicker muscle mass, you know. He originally competed as a male in weightlifting competitions, and yeah, he had some success, but those junior national results that he had, they never would have qualified Hubbard for the men's senior national team. But when competing as a woman, Hubbard had seen phenomenal success as a weightlifter despite being nearly twice the average age of every other competitor. Hubbard not only qualified for the Olympics, but also won a gold medal in the 2019 Pacific Games. But the final demographic is harmed, and the purpose of this show, often irreparably so. By promoting the transgender ideology, it's kids. It's inconceivable that any thinking person could truly believe that it's justifiable to prevent minors from drinking and gambling and driving and purchasing firearms, yet they believe they should be allowed to mutilate their bodies with hormone blockers and gender reassignment surgeries. Society places certain restrictions on children's rights because they lack the cognitive development and the awareness to fully comprehend the consequences of their actions. To think that a 5 or a 10-year-old has the ability to comprehend what it means to transition, it's preposterous. The facts further underscored by studies showing that 80 to 95% of children who experience some disassociation with their gender, they're actually going to identify with their biological sex later on in their adolescence. It seems that children now, they're constantly beset on radical theories surrounding gender fluidity and transgenderism. For example, parents, nationwide, they're beginning to make the ineffably harmful choice to raise their children genderless. You know, students as young as 4 in Scotland can now change their sex at school without a parent's knowledge or their consent. And it's difficult to imagine the level of confusion and anxiety that such outrageous programs and ideologies must manifest elementary schoolers and young children. Clearly, there is a prevalent and pressing issue regarding transgenderism. However, the issue is undeniably complex and doesn't yield an easy or a simple solution. And discrimination against individuals suffering from transgenderism, that can't be the solution either. Those experiencing a legitimate disassociation with their biological gender, they must be approached with empathy and compassion, and a resolution to conflict should be sought. But we can't indulge their delusions and their need to realize that a person's sex, it is immutable characteristics of their being. If the integrity of women's sports and societal standards of privacy and decency and children's health are to be upheld, then we got to return to the understanding that there are vast, unbridgeable, and legitimate biological differences between men and women. Contrary to popular belief, gender is not a social construct. It's real. It's a measurable trait that's fundamental and innumerable to societal institutions. All right, so Roxanne says, she tells me about Jazz was a little boy who, from the age around 5-6, let his parents know he didn't feel like a boy. It was a show on Discovery or History. He took blockers and never developed as a male. No Adam's apple, small genitalia, shaped like a girl. She goes on to write that parents need to stress to their children the difference between male and female and what they were born as. I agree. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for me. We went a little bit over, but that's all right. I appreciate all of you tuning in to the show that seeks not to provide that middle ground analysis, but to remain consistent to that inconvenient truth that so many people refuse to see. Real topics, real conversation, real truth, no matter how bad it hurts. And the real truth is we are harming our children in the name of wokeism. So until next time, friends, thank you for your service. Thank you for your patriotism to this country. Without our men and women in uniform, our veteran community, and great Americans like yourself, our country would be a very different place. We are the only ones who stand between freedom and chaos. So as always, friends, don't let your dog tags dangle in the dirt. Stay on your feet and continue to fight that good fight against everything that is wrong. If you love your freedom, think a veteran. If you love your peace, think a police officer. And if you see a first responder anywhere, give them a high five, a handshake. Tell them job well done because they are still out there grinding while the rest of us are living our lives. So God bless each and every one of you. God bless the United States of America. Catch me every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 5 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time, right here, AOW Radio, Raw Talk Online, IPM Nation. Guys, we are everywhere for you to join. Catch us on Spotify, Apple, iHeart, iTunes, Podcast will be uploaded shortly after this show. Take care of yourselves, friends. My name is Philip Blackman, and I'm out of here.